Welcome to the deep dive. We're going to be exploring something kind of interesting today.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So we're looking into how even the best of intentions can sometimes
backfire.
Yeah, kind of. Exactly. Especially when we're talking about like iconics and social dynamics and all that.
Yeah, it's really fascinating, you know?
And to help us unpack all of this,
Break it down.
yeah, we've got an expert here with us
Hello.
who can, make sense of it all.
Happy to be here. Yeah, I think it's so interesting how often, like, the focus on good intentions, you
Yeah.
know, can actually end up overshadowing some of the downsides.
Totally.
And then you get outcomes nobody expected.
Yeah. And that's what we're going to be diving into today with a collection of essays by Thomas Sowell.
Oh, interesting.
He's kind of a big deal.
Yeah, economist, social theorist.
Yeah. And political philosopher.
Right.
He really pushes us to think about like, do good intentions
Always the.
always lead to good outcomes?
Yeah.
And then what happens when they don't?
Yeah, I think what's really insightful about Sowell's work is that he like encourages us to go beyond just like our own opinions, you
Right.
know, like look at the actual evidence, like what actually happened, no matter what your political leanings are, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
He doesn't shy away from like challenging
Anyone.
challenging stuff from all sides.
Right. He doesn't fit neatly into any box.
No.
And one of the things that really hit me was his example in Housing Hurdles about these height restrictions in cities.
Oh, yeah.
On the surface, it's like, okay, wanting to keep a city looking nice, that's a good thing.
Yeah, aesthetically pleasing. Yeah.
But then Sowell points out that these rules can make housing crazy expensive,
Oh,
and
wow.
then people can't afford to live there.
Yeah, affordability becomes a huge issue.
Exactly.
And I think what's so interesting here is that these goals that seem so positive end up having kind of the opposite effect, you know, because
Right.
you're limiting the supply of
That would quote,
housing, right?
especially in places where people want to live. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So what happens?
Prices go up.
Prices go up, and the people who end up getting priced out are often the ones that.
The policy was supposed to help.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of wild.
Yeah, it's like trying to create this perfect city,
Yeah.
but there's this hidden cost.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's not just about affordability either. So it actually points out a connection between these height restrictions and like highway fatalities.
Oh, wow.
In places like California,
Interesting.
people are forced to live further away,
Yeah.
and that means longer commutes,
Right.
more time on the road, more risk of accidents.
It's true. It's true. It's like, I think it just shows how like interconnected
All this is
everything is. Yeah.
one thing leads to another, and you don't even
You
realize.
try to make one thing better
And
and
something else gets worse.
exactly.
Yeah.
It's all about thinking about like those ripple effects,
The unintended consequences. Yeah, even when you're trying to do something good.
Right. And some people might say, well, if you can afford to live in those fancy places, you should be the one paying for it to look nice,
Yeah.
right?
That's a fair point.
Right.
But it brings up the question of like,
Who decides?
yeah, who gets to decide and who ends up actually shouldering the burden, you know?
Yeah.
And it reminds us that with every policy decision,
There's a trade-off.
there's always a trade-off, there's always some give and
And
take.
it's not always easy to figure out like
Right.
right answer.
No, there's no easy answers here.
Okay, let's shift gears a little bit
Okay, sure.
and talk about something even more, I guess, controversial:
Oh boy.
price gouging,
Ooh.
specifically after natural disasters.
Okay.
So Sowell's essay, Price Gouging in Florida,
Yeah.
uses hurricanes as an example.
Makes sense.
And it's easy to get upset
Oh, yeah.
when prices for like water and batteries
Yeah.
just skyrocket after a hurricane.
Everything's so expensive. It's
Yeah.
like, come on, you know?
So what does Sowell say about all this?
Well, I think, you know, the term price gouging is
Yeah.
it's very loaded, right?
It is.
It's very emotionally charged. But so what he wants us to look past that.
Okay.
He argues that those high prices, even though they seem really unfair, actually they serve a purpose.
Okay, but wouldn't it be more compassionate to, make sure that those essential things stay
Yeah.
affordable during a crisis?
I see what you're saying, but
Even if there's less to go around.
here's where you got to understand supply and demand.
Okay.
So when prices go up,
Yeah.
It encourages suppliers, right?
Okay.
To bring stuff to the area where it's needed.
Okay.
You know, think about it. If prices stayed really low,
yeah,
what would make suppliers want to risk like a dangerous trip
right.
to bring in more supplies?
So letting prices go up actually helps fix the shortage in the long run.
That's exactly it. It's like a self-correcting system, you know?
Wow.
Those higher prices, they're a signal
to the market.
To the market that, hey, something's needed over here.
Right.
And then boom, more supplies start coming in.
It's kind of counterintuitive, but I see what you're saying.
Like, okay.
It's more effective than just relying on people to be nice.
Yeah, it's not that there's no place for compassion and aid,
mm-hmm.
but understanding these forces, these market forces,
yeah.
it helps us see things from a different angle, you know?
It makes you think about, like, how we react to these kinds of things.
Mm.
Like, we might get angry.
Yeah.
But maybe that's not the best way to actually solve the problem.
That's why it's so important to analyze these things carefully.
Because
there's always more to it than meets the eye.
Totally.
You know, you got to think about the complexities.
Yeah.
The trade-offs.
Even when you're dealing with something really emotional.
Right, exactly.
Okay, well, let's talk about another topic that's always up for debate.
Right, what's that?
Minimum wage.
Oh, yeah, that's a big one.
So he tackles this in his essay called Minimum Wage Madness.
Oh, interesting title.
Right. And his take on it might surprise some people.
Oh, okay, I'm curious.
So the idea of raising the minimum wage
mm-hmm.
to help people earn a living wage, that's a good thing.
Of course. Yeah.
But Sahil argues that we need to look beyond that.
Beyond the good intentions.
Yes. And think about, you know, the downsides.
Okay.
He suggests that these minimum wage laws
mm-hmm.
could actually make unemployment worse.
Really?
Yeah. And particularly among
the low-skilled workers.
The very people it's trying to help.
Wow.
Okay. But don't a lot of people say that raising the minimum wage helps the economy?
Yeah, they say it puts more money in people's pockets.
Right. More money to spend.
Which leads to more spending, yeah.
How does Sowell address that?
So he gets that point, you know. But he points out that labor markets, they're complicated.
Right.
And if you raise the cost of labor too much,
mm-hmm.
it can backfire on you.
Okay.
Especially for like small businesses.
Yeah, they might not be able to hire as many people.
Right. Or they might have to like raise their prices to make up for it.
Which causes inflation.
Which can lead to inflation, exactly.
So it's a tough situation.
Yeah, it's a balancing act.
You want to help workers, but you don't want to hurt the businesses that employ them.
Exactly. It's all about like those unintended consequences.
A ripple effect.
Yeah, you got to think about the big picture, you know.
And so I was really pushing us to grapple with that.
He's not saying that helping people is a bad idea.
No.
He wants us to think about the whole thing.
All the different pieces.
Yeah, all the consequences, both the good and the bad.
It's a reminder that even when we're trying to do the right thing, our actions can have effects that we didn't even consider.
And that's why, like, examining these things in detail is so important.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there's rarely a simple solution to a complex problem.
Right.
It's always more complicated than it seems.
Okay. Well, on that note, let's talk about Sowell's analysis of social programs.
Okay. Sure.
Specifically Social Security.
Oh, interesting.
In his essay, Privatizing Social Security,
mm-hmm.
Part 2, he paints a kind of...
what's the word?
A kind of concerning picture.
Concerning?
Yeah, of a program that a lot of people rely on.
For retirement, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So Sowell compares Social Security to...
What's the comparison?
To insurance companies.
Insurance companies, okay.
So insurance companies have to be really careful...
Oh, yeah.
...about how much risk they take on.
Right.
And making sure they have enough money to pay out...
For claims, yeah.
They have a big incentive to, you know...
Stay afloat.
Stay solvent, exactly.
Stay in business.
But Social Security is backed by the government.
Right.
So shouldn't that make it more stable?
You would think so, yeah. Yeah. But Sowell argues that politicians, they're driven by getting elected.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
And so they might make promises.
That they can't keep.
They can't keep, yeah, especially in the long run.
So this system that's supposed to be a safety net
mm-hmm.
could actually become a problem.
Because of politics.
Yeah.
That's a pretty serious thought.
It is.
You know, it makes you think about like the conflict between wanting to help people,
mm-hmm.
passion,
right.
and the reality of like, money.
Can you actually pay for
it? Can you actually pay for it? Yeah.
And so Will doesn't necessarily have all the answers.
No, but he does.
It makes you think.
He makes you think.
He throws out some alternatives.
Like what?
Like personal retirement accounts.
Okay.
You know, where people have more control over their own money.
Right.
Their own savings.
So is it better to promise more than you can deliver?
Right.
Or is it better to create a system that's sustainable?
Sustainable.
That's the question.
Wow.
That's what Sol wants us to wrestle with.
So we've talked about housing, natural disasters, minimum wage, even Social Security.
It's a lot.
And it seems like there's this theme running through it all.
What's that?
Even when we're trying to do good,
mm-hmm.
our actions can have these unintended consequences.
And that's just the beginning.
Yeah.
So Well's work, there's so much in there.
Well, we've only scratched the surface here today.
Yeah.
There's a lot more to unpack.
Lots to explore.
But we're going to have to pause for now.
Took a break.
Stay tuned, though.
Yeah, come back.
When we come back, we'll continue our journey into the fascinating world of
Thomas Sowell.
Thomas Sowell.
And all his ideas.
And all his thought-provoking ideas.
Yeah, wait.
Yeah, me neither.
All right. See you soon.
All right, see. Welcome back to The Deep Dive. We're continuing our exploration of Thomas Sowell's thought-provoking essays.
Yeah, he's really got a way of connecting all sorts of things together, you know, like housing, prices, diversity, social mobility.
It's all like tied together somehow.
It is. It all comes back to like these core principles about like how societies work, you know?
Yeah. And one of the things he keeps coming back to
mm-hmm.
is this idea of unintended consequences.
Yeah, the ripple effects.
Yeah, the things we don't see coming.
It's like that saying, you know, the road to hell is paved with good intentions.
Right. You're so focused on the good thing you want to do.
Yeah.
You don't see the downsides.
For who ends up paying the price, right?
Exactly. And so really makes this point in his essay on property rights.
Oh, yeah. Property rights.
Yeah. So he's critiquing this trend of, you know, all these zoning laws and environmental regulations.
Mm-hmm. Which, I mean, a lot of them are meant to do good, right?
Like protect the environment.
Yeah. Or preserve communities.
But he's saying that sometimes they can actually step on people's property rights without even, like, achieving the good they were supposed to.
Hmm.
He gives this example of someone not being allowed to plant a hedge on their own property.
What?
Oh. Because it might block their neighbor's view.
Oh, come on. That's kind of ridiculous.
It sounds crazy, right?
Yeah.
But it shows how easily, like, our freedoms can be chipped away.
In the name of the greater good.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like we're sacrificing individual liberty for the sake of, I don't know, the collective or something.
So where do we draw the line then?
That's the question, right?
How do you balance like what individuals need?
With what the community needs.
Yeah, it's a tough one.
It is, but so he really pushes us to have those conversations.
Yeah, it's a good reminder that freedom isn't just some like abstract idea.
No, it's real.
It affects our lives
every day,
even when it comes to stuff like planting a hedge.
Absolutely. And this all ties into another big thing Sowell talks about: personal responsibility. He really believes that people should be held accountable
for their choices.
Yeah, even when things are tough.
But I mean, some people would say that ignores like systemic inequalities,
right?
Like not everyone starts off in the same place.
That's true. That's a valid point.
How does Sowell, how does he deal with that?
So he acknowledges that life isn't fair.
Okay.
But he thinks that if we just focus on like the external stuff, like discrimination or whatever.
You know, things outside of our control.
Yeah, it can make people feel helpless.
Like a victim.
Yeah, and he believes that people can overcome those things.
Even if it's hard.
Even if it's really hard, yeah, through hard work and determination.
So it's not about denying that those systems exist.
No.
It's about focusing on what you can control.
Exactly.
Taking ownership.
Yeah, not just being like passive, you know?
Right.
It's about agency.
It's a tricky balance, you know?
It is.
Recognizing the systems, but also like
empowering individuals.
Yeah. And this kind of connects back to something else Sowell talks about.
What's that?
Realistic expectations.
Oh, interesting.
So he's critical of these like utopian ideas.
Yeah, like everything's going to be perfect.
Quick fixes, easy solutions.
Which, let's be honest, never really work out.
He's saying they oversimplify things.
Right.
And then we end up disappointed.
Because the world's just, it's more complicated than that.
Yeah, he seems to favor like a more gradual approach.
Yeah, incremental.
Yeah, one that recognizes that things are messy.
And that change takes time.
Yeah, and you have to focus on what's actually achievable.
Not these big sweeping changes.
It's a perspective that I think could be helpful for us here.
Locally.
Yeah, in our own community, as we're trying to figure out, you know, things like housing.
Affordable housing.
Education.
Monopoly development.
Oh, yeah. Tough issues.
We got to be careful about those quick fix ideas.
Yeah, they sound good.
They sound great on paper.
But they might not actually fix the real problem.
Yeah, you got to get to the root of it.
And that's another thing Sewell's really good at.
What's that?
He can connect history, economics, and social commentary.
All in one.
Yeah, to tell a really compelling story.
And it's all based on, like, real world stuff.
Real world examples?
Yeah, things he's seen, things that have happened in history.
It makes it easier to understand even the economic stuff.
Yeah, even when it gets complicated.
There's this one essay, Older Budweiser.
Interesting title.
Yeah, he talks about his hometown in Czechoslovakia.
Okay.
And how, like, government policies that were supposed
To bring people together?
Yeah, to promote harmony.
Yeah.
Actually ended up making things worse.
Oh, wow.
So even with good intentions.
Things can backfire.
Yeah. And it's not just about, like, the policy itself. It's about the context.
The history, the culture.
Yeah.
That all plays a role.
One size fits all doesn't work.
Definitely not.
Okay, well, let's talk about a more, I guess, sensitive topic.
All right, I'm ready.
So Sewell gets into race and intelligence.
Oh, okay.
In his series of essays on race and IQ, he looks at the scientific evidence.
Which is something a lot of people don't want to talk about.
Yeah, it's a touchy subject.
It is.
I was a little hesitant to read that section.
Yeah, I can understand that.
It's easy to, you know, get misunderstood.
For sure.
But I think it's important to approach it honestly.
Yeah.
To follow the evidence.
Wherever it leads.
Yeah, even if it's uncomfortable.
So Sewell's not afraid to go there.
Right. He wants us to think critically.
Not just jump to conclusions.
Or fall back on, like, ideology.
Yeah, it's not helpful.
So what does he conclude?
Well, he's careful to avoid easy answers.
That's it.
Because it's a really complex issue.
Yeah.
He recognizes that genetics, environment, culture, they all play a part. But he says the evidence does suggest that genetics does matter.
Okay.
And that ignoring that can lead to, like, bad policies.
That don't actually fix anything.
Exactly. So it's a nuanced perspective. It challenges us to think about things from different angles.
And not just shut down ideas because they make us uncomfortable.
Yeah, that's the key takeaway from all of Sewell's work, I think.
He's always pushing us
out of our comfort zone.
To think critically.
To question everything.
And to be open to the idea.
Yeah.
That.
But maybe we're wrong.
Yeah. And that's what makes his work so valuable.
It's not about telling us what to think.
It's about teaching us how to think.
Exactly. And this ties into another thing Sewell talks about.
What's that?
He's pretty critical of what he calls, like, the intellectuals.
Oh, okay.
Or the anointed.
What does he mean by that?
He's talking about people who, like, prioritize theories.
Over, like, what's actually happening.
Yeah, the real world.
So, like, people who talk about solving problems.
Versus people who are actually out there doing it.
Like, doers.
The doers, yeah. He calls them the talkers and the doers.
Okay.
He thinks some intellectuals can be a little arrogant.
Out of touch.
Yeah, they advocate for policies that sound good, but then when you actually try them out,
they don't work.
They have all these negative consequences.
He's not anti-intellectual, though.
Right.
No.
Not at all.
I mean, he's clearly very smart.
Very smart, but he's just wary of, I don't know, intellectual posturing, I guess.
Like people who are more concerned with sounding smart
than with actually solving problems.
It's like he's saying good intentions aren't enough.
You need to understand how the world actually works.
Yeah. And learn from the people who are out there, like, doing the work.
The people on the ground.
Yeah, it makes me think about, like, the entrepreneurs in our area, the community leaders.
The teachers, the healthcare workers.
The people who are actually making a difference.
They might not have all the fancy theories.
But they know what's going on.
They have the experience.
And so Will's, he's saying we should listen to them.
We need to value that experience, that practical knowledge.
It's just as important as the theory.
As the book smarts.
And, you know, it's making me realize how much Sewell's ideas apply to our own community.
Yeah, totally.
His insights about, you know, economics and policy.
They're relevant to all sorts of things.
From zoning laws to healthcare.
It's a framework for thinking about problems.
Yeah, and understanding how all these different things are connected.
It's really helpful.
So how can we, like, use Sewell's ideas to address the challenges we face here?
That's a great question.
I mean, he's writing about these big national issues.
Yeah.
How do we bring it down to a local level?
I think we got to start by asking ourselves some tough questions.
About, like, the programs we support.
Yeah. Are they actually working?
Are they doing what they're supposed to do?
And are there, like, unintended consequences we're not seeing?
We have to be honest with ourselves.
Yeah. And be willing to change course if we need to.
And that's, I think that's really what Sol's work is all about.
It's about thinking critically.
Being realistic.
And using evidence to make decisions.
He's not just giving us the answers.
No, he's giving us a way to think.
A way to analyze problems.
And find solutions.
And that's why it's so valuable.
It's not about ideology.
It's about empowering us to think for ourselves.
To question assumptions. And to arrive at our own conclusions.
Based on evidence.
Yeah, not just blind faith.
And to be open to the possibility that, you know,
we might be wrong.
Even when we have good intentions.
Our ideas might not always work out the way we want them to.
It's about being humble.
Curious.
Always learning.
And always searching for the truth.
Even when it's hard.
That's what makes Sol's work so powerful.
It's a call to action.
To think deeper.
To engage in difficult conversations.
And to work toward building a better world.
One thoughtful step at a time. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. So before the break, we were getting into this concept of trade-offs.
Yeah, it's something that Sol talks about a lot. It's
right.
Like, it's this basic principle. You know, it applies to pretty much everything we do.
From, like, personal stuff to...
do big policy decisions.
Yeah, and he keeps reminding us...
There's no such thing as a free lunch.
Right. Every decision has a cost.
Every decision has a cost. Every decision has a benefit. You got to weigh them both.
It's easy to get caught up in, like, the goal.
Ah.
And not think about the downsides.
Or who might end up, you know... having to deal with those downsides.
Exactly. And so Will's like, hey.
Take a closer look.
Yeah. Think about the trade-offs.
What are you giving up to get what you want?
So, for example, going back to the minimum wage thing, the idea is to help low-wage workers.
Yeah. Make their lives better.
But, like we talked about, there's this potential trade-off.
Businesses might suffer.
Yeah. They might not be able to afford to pay everyone more.
Especially smaller businesses.
And then people lose their jobs.
You're trying to solve one problem.
Low wages.
But you might create another one.
Unemployment.
It just shows, like, you got to think about the whole picture.
Yeah. Those unintended consequences.
It's not always obvious what's going to happen.
And this applies to so many things like environmental regulations.
Yeah, protecting the environment is super important.
Of course.
But if those regulations get too strict...
It can hurt businesses.
Yeah, it can drive up costs.
Which then gets passed on to consumers.
Prices go up.
Or even worse, people lose their jobs.
It's always a balancing act.
It feels like you're always trying to, like, find the sweet spot.
Yeah, minimize the bad stuff.
Maximize the good stuff.
And that's where Sowell's work is so helpful.
Yeah.
He helps us see that there's not always a simple answer.
Right. No easy solutions.
You got to recognize the trade-offs.
Weigh the costs and the benefits.
And then make the best decision you can.
Based on, like, what's actually going on.
Evidence. Facts.
Not just what sounds good.
And I think it's also about being humble. You know, admitting that we don't always know everything.
And that even when we try to do the right thing.
Things can go wrong.
So Wells' work, it really makes you think about all this stuff.
Yeah, it's all about critical thinking.
Questioning assumptions.
Looking at the evidence.
And trying to understand how the world works.
He's not telling us what to believe.
No, he's giving us the tools to figure it out for ourselves.
Which is so much more valuable, I think.
It's been a really amazing experience diving into Sol's work.
I agree.
And I hope our listeners got something out of it.
Yeah, me too.
I encourage everyone to, you know, keep reading Sol.
Yeah. Keep thinking about these ideas.
And apply them to your own lives.
To your communities.
Remember, critical thinking is a journey.
It's not a destination.
Keep asking questions. Keep exploring.
And don't be afraid to challenge your own beliefs.
And always, always think about the trade-offs.
There's no such thing as a free lunch.
Well, that's all the time we have for today.
Thanks for having me.
It's been a pleasure, and thanks to all of you for joining us on the Deep Dive.